Hi everyone, my name is Artur Leão, and first of all, I like to say sorry because I have a cold, so I'm coughing a lot, so sorry for that. This talk is Unity, not just for games. I'm gonna tell you a bit about my experience in a project that I've been working lately, and as you can imagine, it's not a game, it's something different. So, who am I? As I said, Artur Leão. Currently, I'm a partner and project manager at DreamLab. Of course, this is the official title. I'm a 3D artist, I'm a coder. I'm a bit like my background, which is a technical artist, so I do a bit of everything. But now I step up and started to work with DreamLab here in Portugal. A bit about my background. I work for CCP Games in the MMO EVE Online as a senior VFX artist. I went there after I worked for several years in post-production. They were looking to introduce a different look and feel in the visual effects for EVE. So they brought me in and thought it was a good idea to bring someone from the offline world. And it was pretty amazing. I learned a lot over there. I had a chance to work with programming. I was in the tech art team. So it was a bit of both worlds, like most of the time in my career. Also at CCP Games, I had the chance to work on EVR, which today has evolved into EVE Valkyrie. We were those guys over there. We worked after hours and at our 20% just to make a fun game that ran on the Oculus. It was a major success at EVE FanFest, and CCP picked it up and turned it into a full-fledged game, and hopefully it will be released soon, and it will be very successful. After CCP, I went to work pretty much like Ivo on the door next room. I went to work for Ubisoft, Massive, in Sweden. And here I went into a bit of a different role. I acted as a senior tech art. I worked on Tom Clancy, The Division, and an undisclosed project, which was a mobile companion thing. I'm just gonna show you our showreel from my current company. I hope you enjoy. Oh, wait, sorry. And here, there you go, so everyone can see it. Oh, sorry. So, as you can see, we're a digital agency. We're heavy on visual effects and computer graphics. And now we're working in real-time technologies, and that's the reason I'm here today. So real-time architectural visualization, it's been growing strong this last years. I'm not sure how many of you is into this type of work being done with Unreal and Unity, mostly Unreal. But for me, I have a background on doing architectural visualization on offline rendering, and it's very, very good for you as an artist to be able to tweak things in real time. For you as a client, a few years ago, if you came to us and you asked, okay, I want to change the color of that wall over there, I would just say, okay, that's fine, come back in a week, because we have to re-render everything. And nowadays, we have the power of real-time engines, and everyone loves it, because you can change it just like that. And as I've said, there's a lot of people interested in this type of market nowadays. But these two images, by the way, are Unreal Engine. I'm sorry they're not credited. I just took them on Google Images. And now let's go to Unity 5. As I was saying, at least from my perspective, I've been seeing a lot of architectural visualizations done in real time, mostly in Unreal Engine. But as you can see here in these two images, this is done by Veselin Efremov, which is a developer from Unity. And they look pretty good. And again, they're real time. Unity 5 has stepped up the real time GI by bringing Geomeric Enlighted Engine, which is a very, very good engine. You can do both real time GI and baked GI. Baked GI, it's faster on the device or on the PC or Mac. It says faster, of course. It's faster to run, but it's a lot slower to bake. And the process to work with Baked GI is not as straightforward as real-time GI currently in Unity 5, which is very straightforward. You just throw your meshes into it with your normal UV channel, or you can just say, okay, unwrap this thing for me, and it just works. It's very, very good. But again, if you're aiming for low-end or mid-end devices, I would go with Baked GI because it runs pretty well. You have Final Gather. I'm not sure if any of you are familiar with offline rendering methods, but Final Gather is pretty well-known method for doing GI, and you have that currently in Unity 5. And by the way, I have to say I'm not affiliated with Unity or Microsoft in any way. So this project I want to tell you guys about, it's aimed for low and mid-range computers and devices. And again, it's supposed to be a real-time experience for the client, for their clients, for trade shows, wherever they want to use it. So it consisted as we built this apartment. We did offline rendering. We deliver a project to our clients, but they wanted something a bit different. They wanted something that they could take to road shows, that people could play with it. So we suggested doing a real-time experience. And you have some objects like floors, walls, carpets, curtains that are completely dynamic, so you can change the texture. And not just change the texture, so in our case, this is all connected to an online backend store that client already had. And he wanted to make sure that the process for them would continue to be exactly the same. So They have a couple people working, updating the website, building new products, and they want us to make sure that would stay just the same. And we say, okay, that's fine. So every product that you see here, that you can change here and here, they have it in their store. They can add, delete, modify their products, and the application will automatically update its content. So, as I was saying, the idea was to have minor impact to the client's current workflow. I can tell you that their store is something built on WordPress. It's not a common store, so it's something custom. And we definitely didn't want to mess with their code. We didn't want to build complex PHP, whatever, that could, I don't know. If they do any changes in their store in the future, we would have to go deep again into PHP code, and we didn't want that. So we built a REST API web service that allows us to talk very easily to whatever database they have. If they change something in their database, we can update that easily as well. And our application, so since we built the REST API service ourselves, we have our application talking always the same way with the REST API service. And if something in the database changes, we just go into the REST API and we change whatever we need to be changed over there. So the app is hopefully watertight into changes done in the database. So this is the output of, so when we make a query, well, you can see it here, but it's just a bunch of letters and URLs and whatnot. So this is the boring part. We've been using 3ds Max as our main DCC tool. All our team is very experienced in working with 3ds Max. We do most of our projects are done in 3ds Max too, so we felt pretty confident with continue to do so. And Unity and 3ds Max are very easy to work with, pretty straightforward, pushing geometry from one side to the other, including materials. As I was saying before, we already had done an offline rendering service for this project. So we had the high poly scene containing all high poly assets for all of the objects, even small tables, they were high poly. So what we did, we had to convert everything into low poly. Although one of the first things that I tried was to take the high poly scene into Unity, and it just worked. It was pretty impressive. But of course, we want this to work on iPad mini first generation. We want it to work on 100 euros Android tablets, and that poly count was simply unacceptable for those projects. But I can tell you that it ran fairly okay in my 3-year, 4-year year old workstation. But so we started the process of converting everything into low poly. And depending on the object that we were working on, we either did pro-optimize. How many 3ds Max artists are here? One, two, yeah, okay. So we did a simple optimization. You just apply a modifier on top of the object, and you say, okay, I have a screenshot on the next slide. So we converted most of our objects into low poly. Some of them we didn't use any modifier, and we just redid the mesh from the ground up. Let's say like a table, doing a low poly reduction using an algorithm, it wasn't good enough because you still have many polys. So we just like build it against like a box and a field chamfers. So it was very fast. So we baked textures. We We baked ambient occlusion, cavity maps, and, well, normal maps, but I'll get to that later on. And we are currently using two UV channels for hero objects. Hero objects is stuff like couch, chairs, or rugs. So we call the hero objects objects that had a texture when you enter the scene. But when you change the texture into one of those from the store, they need to have a specific tiling, and we need to do some measures on top of that. So we definitely needed two UV channels so we can do our math and still keep normal maps on top of that, using the detail and the detail maps, both albedo and normal maps. So as I was saying, some objects we just went very straightforward using Pro Optimizer. And for you non-3ds Max artists, or I'm not sure how you can do this in Maya, but so you just apply the modifier on top and say, okay, I want a vertex count of 10,000 vertices, and it just throws you something like that. This is a big time saver if you bake the normal maps and ambient occlusion and cavity maps. You can end up with a nice looking real-time assets with minor work made on it. This is something very important that you use on this modifier, which is keep textures and keep UV boundaries. So what happens is I bake the textures before applying this modifier, and then I'm sure that after the optimization, the UVs will be in the exact same spot as before. So whatever you did before will continue to be after the optimization. So this is the example of a UV layout. This is a UV one, which is in max. So this in max is map channel one. In Unity, in Unity is UV one. So it's pretty much the same. So we use most of the object surface area expanded on the UV layout, so we can have like very large surface. We can have detail on the normal maps. This is where we bake the normal maps and cavity maps and ambient occlusion. But for our tiling, so we can apply the textures from the client, because our textures are mostly tiles, so they have like a width and height defined. We needed to use a different tile, which went into the UV0. There's small scale over here because we do some math, and when you end up seeing the texture applied in Unity, the tile size is the exact same size as it is in real life. And there's some math behind it. We ended up, after some trial and error, we ended up exporting only cavity maps, and these cavity maps were plugged in into the detail albedo slot. Why did we do that? Because the detail albedo slot actually multiplies two times into whatever you have in your main albedo slot. So if you have a texture, let's say you have this texture on the ground on your main albedo channel, and then you apply this on top, it's going to do a multiply. I'm not sure if you guys are used to Photoshop. When you multiply something on top, it just get, if this is black, it will get darker where it's black. Where it's white, nothing will happen. Since albedo maps do this two times, just being white wasn't good enough, so we got weird results. It burned into the image, so we figured out that that the cavity maps were very good, because this gives you like a mid gray, exact mid gray, 127 RGB color, and it doesn't affect at all on the gray areas. But then you get these darker areas and the brighter areas burned into the top of the object, and it gets a really nice detail. And this is just for the albedo of the detail map. So this is good because exactly like I was saying, the range between white and between dark areas and bright areas is not as big as on the ambient occlusion map, so you don't get that burn in. Otherwise, you'll just get whenever it was white, it will just blow up the color and it looked bad. After we did some tests exploring normal maps from 3ds Max, but in the end we decided that these cavernae maps just work just fine. You just duplicate the material in Unity, you copy the file, and you just say you wanted to use it as a normal map, and it works pretty darn good. So this was after a while, this was good for us because the workflow in Max was really minimal. We went to the Pro Optimizer to optimize our assets. We had to do some remodeling, and then the maps were just albedo, just a cavity map, and it was good. So this was relatively to the textures and how to optimize the meshes in Max, but to get this into Unity itself. Like I said, right in the beginning of the project, I exported the whole scene, high poly, everything into one file, into one FBX file. It was a very large FBX file. And it was okay. And we continued to do that even after we optimized models, but we always ended up having a lot of the built file was always big. I recall our first build was around 500 megabytes, and this is something that we want to have for PC, web. So if you have something for 500 megabytes on the web, or even downloading from the app store, just people get bored and they just cancel and move into something else. So after some trial and error, we ended up exporting per object instead of per scene, instead of the whole scene. And of course, we can take advantage of instancing. Let's say we have our dinner table, it has six chairs. We only export one FBX file and everything else is instanced. There's, of course, you have the same vertex count in runtime, but you have benefits in terms of memory footprint. And we also imported those FBX files with embedded materials and textures. We were very careful after some time, not at the beginning of the project, but after some time, we ended up renaming all our materials. We did some cleanup on the 3D project itself because things were getting messy in Unity, and I'll explain you, on this point why. So we started to have a lot of materials that didn't make sense because they were doing the exact same thing. They had the same texture. They were both wood. They were both glass. So why have two? So we ended up doing some cleanup on the 3ds Max side, and then we wrote an import script to change the default behavior of, importing FBX. So when you import FBX by default in Unity, what happens is he looks into the texture name and he creates a material based on that texture name. For me and for my colleagues at DreamLab, that's not how we're used to work. So we work with material names in 3ds Max, and we try to instance materials instead of having textures based on where you're going to apply the material. So we wrote an import script to change the behavior, which you can. so we ended up telling Unity, okay, we want to import on all FBXs, we want you to take the material name as the material and not the texture name. So we had a one-to-one ratio on all the materials we have in 3ds Max and all the materials we have in Unity. So it's pretty easy to, if you want to change a material, if you want to change an object, everything is very close tied, and there's no big room for errors. We used a script to do some cleanup after this work has been done, and now I can tell you we had around 900 materials in the beginning, and now we have around 40 materials. So, because we have a lot of textures, so it was a very good optimization. As I was saying, import materials by material name and not by texture name. And on the FBX import script, if you're interested in looking into this for your projects, you can search for this line over here, asset post-processor on pre-processed model. So this tells Unity, okay, before importing my model, let me set up the settings for this import. And then you can tell whatever you want on that method. One of the things we try to do, since we have a lot of experience on architectural visualization for offline rendering, is to keep everything linear and, of course, work in high dynamic range, which is something you can do now very easily in Unity 5. Took advantage of image effects for post-processing or post-production, which normally in a standard workflow in 3D, you render your images and then you take it into an application like Photoshop or Digital Fusion or Nuke, and then you do some post-processing on it. In Unity, you can just apply your post-processing image effects in your camera, you tweak them, you have the look that you want, and some of them are very expensive in terms of computation, but most of them work on even low-end devices. We also used tone mapping. Tone mapping actually cuts whatever happens here on HDR, but it's something common. Again, it's something very common on architectural renders. V-Ray, if some of you know, normally use Reinhardt tone mapping. So everyone is very familiar with this type of look. And since we were doing architectural visualization, we wanted to try to match that look that people, that our clients are used to seeing offline renderings. We want to bring that into real-time engine too. And we ended up doing that using tone mapping. And you have a bunch of different modes. You can play with them. It's very cool. You get some really interesting effects. And of course, as I've said before, this aimed for low-end specs, old PCs, old devices, and of course, it needs to look good. So it's like, we ended up, Unity has three different light baking methods. Non-directional light mapping mode, which is the one we used, because it's fast. Fast in terms of, it's fast on the device, and has a very low memory footprint, which is also something you want if you're running on 256 megabytes devices. But you have directional light mapping mode and directional specular, if I'm not mistaken, which is the best one because it uses all the PBR capabilities at it most. So in the end, after all this talk, this is some screenshots of our project. And this is running, well, on my workstation, runs 60 frames per second or more on €100 Android tablet, runs 30 FPS. On iPhone 5S, 30 FPS. iPad mini, first generation, 30 FPS. Of course, this is the best quality you can get on a PC. You have differences, of course, on the low-end devices, but it still looks good. And most important, it does what it needs to do, which is you can change the textures, and you can see that happening in real time, which is very important for our clients and their clients. When you go to a trade show, you have the tile in front of you. The tile is very nice, but how does this look on a wall? So you can just hand over an iPad and the P- people can see it and they can change it and they can play around with it and see what combinations work better on a real scenario. And I'm sorry a bit, about the gamma from these images. They are a bit brighter, but my surface has a weird gamma issue. And this is the browser that we have inside the app. So as you can see, there's a highlights on when you're walking around the space, you see a bunch of highlight areas, so you know you can interact with them. And once you press it, this shows up and you have all of this is completely dynamic. So we have two series here on the floors. We have five or four series and this gets loaded from their database. If they add a new series of a bunch of new projects they're going to release, it just shows up here. We don't need to deploy the app again. They don't need to call us. So, and all these products are also on their store. We hope right now you just see the name and you can apply the textures, but it's pretty easy and straightforward for us to implement some display of information about the tile itself. So workflow, how am I on time? 10 minutes, okay. So workflow, 3ds Max, Unity. Does anyone do version control here? Does anyone know what version control is? Yeah, okay. So, is everyone, does Unity developer, programmer, or we have a bunch of artists? Help me. Programmers? Okay. So, artists, very easy. Final file number one. Final file number one, _ backup. Final file number one, backup, _ final, approved, _. So what version control does is it lets you manage your files in a very easy way. I'm not going to get into too much detail. We can talk about that outside or just send me an email. But version control allows you to manage your files. And if you screw up something, you can just revert back to an old file. It's a lifesaver. Everyone should use it. If you're doing Unity projects and real projects, if you're doing anything code related, you should definitely do version control. I use Git. It's free. There's a bunch of free service. You have Bitbucket. You have Microsoft Visual Studio Online that allows you to have free repositories for that. So if you're interested, just come and talk to me after the talk, and I'll give you more info on that. But the problem with this is that Git is mostly used for code, so it's for text files. It's not very good for binary formats, especially Git. So to tackle this, we had Git. You can have a submodule, so it's like a Git inside a Git. And what we ended up doing is that the things that we usually change the most is the code and not much the 3D assets. So we kept the 3D assets in a separate repository and we only update the 3D assets submodule once in a while. So it doesn't get too heavy on your main repository. Of course, we use Visual Studio, which is a perfect match if you're doing Unity work. I did some stuff in Mono, but still, Visual Studio is pretty good. And although you can do your version control and you can submit things in Visual Studio, it allows you to do all of that. But I personally prefer SmartKit, and again, I'm not associated with any company over here. I personally prefer SmartKit. It's very easy to use. Pretty straightforward and allows you to manage not just your code in your repository. While Visual Studio, sometimes I ended up forgetting to submit, let's say, a PC file because Visual Studio doesn't see those type of files. So I ended up using an external tool. after a day of work, or sometimes many many times during one day, I do submits, and I always have my backup running over there. And of course, Trello or Visual Studio Online, if you're working on a very, very, very big project. I can tell you that most of my projects are run on Trello, and Trello allows you to, it's like a wall with stickers, with post-its, and you just say, okay, this is my to-do work, this is my work in progress, this is my done, and it's a very simple way for you to keep track of whatever you're doing. Visual Studio Online allows you to do that plus 1,000. You can track a lot of more stuff, and I'm currently only using it in one project that has about, 200,000 lines of code, and has multiple coders working on it, so it definitely needs a different type of management. But we still use Trello for minor tasks. So if you want more info on this, you can come back after the talk and I can tell you more about it. So conclusions, not bad. So we have a very similar pipeline that's used for video games, or that indie developers are using if they're working on Unity. My personal opinion is that ArcViz, real-time ArcViz visualization, it's a growing market. I actually forgot to put here, there's a bunch of store. I'm not sure if you guys know EverMotion. Do you guys know EverMotion? So EverMotion is a website. They've been doing, they have a 3D forum, and for the last 10 years they've been releasing 3D models, of course, aimed for offline rendering. Nowadays, they are starting to do models for real-time engines. And you have EverMotion, and you have UA4Arc.com, I think, which is a very big database done by a Brazilian guy, I think. And it has a lot of very, very good models for, especially for the ArcViz, real-time ArcViz market. Of course, you can use it in your games as an asset, as a normal asset, but they're specifically created for this type of market. My opinion is that this might work for you as a side income for indie developer, as an indie developer, either by creating projects that you can sell for international clients or for clients here in Portugal. I think ArcViz companies are looking into this type of solutions. But if you, let's say you're a one-man show or two-man show and you don't have time for this, you want to do your project, you can still earn some money by doing asset creation specifically for real-time architectural visualization. And again, this can be tackled by a small team, depending on what you aim. This project I show you, there's a lot of code. It's a bit technical. There's a lot of technical stuff on the background, because we're doing web communication. We created a web service. We wrote a JSON parser for this. Now we have a plugin. But you can still do a lot of stuff, especially if you go to the asset store. You can do a project like this with a very small team and still achieve very nice results. One of the things I would like, the conclusions I've been taking, not from this talk, but from my experience with this, is that we would definitely need something like distributed light map baking. ICANN has Unity. Because this is something Unreal has, and at the time we were actually figuring out, okay, are we going to do this in Unity or Unreal? We ended up with Unity because we have a very large database of code in C Sharp, so there's a lot of stuff that we could bring into the project already. But this right now, this is very expensive. And if you can, for us, we have our render farm, so we have 10 computers at our disposal or more. Or we can even put this on the cloud, on Azure or Amazon or whatever, and just bake something instantaneously. And that I wouldn't mind having our current light solution being baked in an hour. Currently, it takes about 8 hours. And at first it was a big hit or miss, because there were some objects that weren't correctly UV'd, so 8 hours right down the drain, and that kind of sucks. But this is on the roadmap, so hopefully we'll get something like that soon. Another thing that I took in from this project is that you can, this is a pretty good tip, I have to put this into practice, and the only thing that worries me is the light probes, but you can make, like, right now I have everything is static, so let's say all the objects are being baked into that solution that takes 8 hours to bake, but you can have only big objects like walls, big tables, or and floors static, so only those objects will contribute to the GI solution, and then you can have light probes, and smaller objects will be lights by those light probes, but this requires a bit more computational power, so I'm not sure if this fits for our excuse me, for our project, and since I'm fine with having my computer running the light baking solution for 8 hours, we'll just keep to that, because it's definitely, if you have the light baked, it's definitely faster than having light probes, at least that I know of. I will also like to have proper anti-aliasing for deferred rendering. Temporal anti-aliasing. But I'm still not sure about what happens in mobile, but especially even in my iPhone 5S, which, like, the screen size is very small, but the resolution is very high, I still see some AA problems. Right now we're using SMA anti-aliasing and a smooth something, I can tell you the acronym after, but it's a solution. It works, but it's not perfect, and it's a bit slow. So I'd love to have a TXAA in the future for deferred rendering. Of course, you don't have this problem with forward rendering, because you can just use MSAA, which is free in Unity. You just toggle on and off. Yeah, not bad. And that's me. Website, and thanks for a beer. I had it outside, so no beer here, just water. And please, if you have any questions, I'd love to answer them here or afterwards.